Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On the program today, Biden's time.
A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy, unity.
Joseph R. Biden, sworn in as the 46th president of the United States. Can he reunite a nation riven by political division, by COVID, by a shaky economy? And with the rapid cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline, he'll make that decision in just a couple of minutes. What will all this mean for Canada? Today, we'll be joined by Canada's Foreign Affairs Minister, Mark Garneau, Canada's ambassador to the United States, Kristen Hillman, and lots more. And then the Trump undertow.
We have worked hard. We've left it all, as the athletes would say, we've left it all in the field. Have a good life. We will see you soon.
Trump is out of the White House. Will he be a drag on both the new president and the Republican Party? What does the Republican Party do now? And how quickly will Joe Biden act in the first few months? Lots to talk about. So we've got the Atlantic senior editor David Frum joining us, and the former cabinet secretary to President Barack Obama, Chris Liu, joining us on that as we look ahead. Also today, Aaron O'Toole boots Derek Sloan from the Conservative Caucus. It just happened just about an hour ago. How united is his party over that decision? They had hours and hours of debate on a secret ballot. Will it alienate social conservatives who voted for Derek Sloan? He was in fourth place. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players.
We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured. My fellow Americans, we have to be different than this. America has to be better than this. And I believe America is so much.
That is Joe Biden, just some of the highlights of his inaugural address today. Now, remember when President John F. Kennedy came to Canada, spoke in Parliament in 1961, and he said, "What unites us is far greater than what divides us." That's true about Canada and the United States, but the arrival of the Biden administration, well, it does mark a stark contrast to the boiling pot on the stove of politics that was Donald Trump. There are still lots of divisions, including over the Keystone XL pipeline. On his very first day in office, Joe Biden plans to kill the Keystone XL pipeline. Tonight, maybe in just a couple of minutes, he will rescind the permit. How will Canada respond? And then what about Joe Biden's plan to promote a Buy American agenda? He's also promised that. Let's find out. Joining me now is Canada's Foreign Affairs Minister, Mark Garneau. Minister Garneau, great to have you on the program. It's an historic day, as you know, in Washington. A very strange day, obviously, a different kind of inauguration than we've ever seen. Just before we get to the hard issues, and there's a lot, your reflections on this moment, just 2 weeks after the January 6th assault on the Capitol and a very different inauguration. What struck you about today and how America is at this inflection point again?
Well, I think, Evan, we witnessed today the strength of American democracy. It was a beautiful ceremony. I think that President Biden made a speech that rallied the American people and really encouraged them to work together to have civil discourse. So I think it was a very optimistic day, and I certainly really enjoyed the parts that I saw.
One of the things that Joe Biden spoke about, President Biden, was working with allies, multilateralism. But that sounds good, but Canada took a shot today. He killed the Keystone XL pipeline on his very first day, rescinding that permit with an executive order. What will Canada's response be to that? Have you responded, and is the pipeline dead?
Well, let me just say this, Evan. From the beginning, Canada's position has been to support the Keystone Pipeline. The Prime Minister, in fact, spoke to President Biden about it when he called him in November. We've always been supportive because we think it's good for both Canada and the United States. However, having said that, it's also true that all indications are that President Biden is going to keep his campaign pledge and he's going to rescind the permit. And we understand that. We respect that, in fact. At the same time, we will be there for the people of Alberta, and we will engage the U.S. administration on so many areas where we share a lot in common. So there's a great deal that we will go forward with our American neighbors to work on.
Oh, okay, but you know, tonight when he finally does formally rescind it, we've all seen that he's going to. It's on the agenda. Is there going to be a Canadian response? I mean, or is it just like it's dead, let's move on? Or is there any way to finally say, look, reconsider that. Things have changed. We've invested a lot. This is not the same pipeline that Barack Obama first vetoed back in 2015. Is there any sense that you could go back to them on this?
Well, I think that in answer to your question, yes, there will be. I'm sure the Prime Minister will respond. We will continue to work with the United States on the question of energy security because we are their most reliable partner, and we are a provider of energy. So that and many other issues, including our common goals with respect to climate change, these are all areas where we will work very, very closely with the United States as we go forward.
Okay, so there's the pipeline issue. So, you know, for Canada, what might be a turning of the chapter was a pretty tough day from a financial and economic point of view. But again, I agree, not a surprising day. Maybe the speed surprised. What about this notion of Buy American? Joe Biden has openly also promised a Buy American agenda to rebuild the American economy that has been shuttered. How do you and how will you make sure Canada doesn't get shafted on some critical economic files like getting shut out of critical procurement issues and key deals for Canadian companies?
What I would say there, Evan, is that your question reminds me of the time that I and many of my colleagues spent in the United States during the time when we were negotiating NAFTA 2. I spoke to governors, I spoke to senators, I spoke to American politicians, and we conveyed the message of how important our mutual trade was, how integrated we were, how our supply chains were heavily integrated, and that it was to our mutual advantage to come up with a new free trade treaty that continued that extremely strong, in fact, the strongest bilateral commercial relationship in the world. So we understand from having gone through that, it is something that we continue to have to make as a message. And we ended up with a very good NAFTA 2. At the same time, we also realize that sometimes there will be differences. And our job as Canada looking after its interests is to continue to carry that message that mutual trade between right. the two of us because of the integration is to our mutual advantage.
Right. But, you know, this is a new administration. You want Joe Biden to have some advantage to Canada. He's starting to sound a lot like the Buy American of Donald Trump. The other issue, sir, will be the two Michaels, the two Canadians who have been 2+ years, just stunning, in that Canadian prison. Have you spoke to the Biden administration on this? Will there be a change in strategy there? Some have said maybe Biden will drop the charges against Meng Wanzhou. Any strategic differences there?
Well, I can hardly wait to speak to Antony Blinken, who's my counterpart, who went through hearings yesterday. And certainly it will be one of the very first items that I'm going to raise with him. You know, with respect to the two Michaels, our Canadian approach has been to seek partnerships with other like-minded countries who are against arbitrary detention, who are against coercive diplomacy. And we will certainly make that point very strongly. The United States administration, the previous one, was supportive, and we're going to continue working in partnership with the United States because the release of the two Michaels, with respect to China, is our number one priority.
Okay, you say you haven't spoken to Antony Blinken, who is your counterpart yet. What about Justin Trudeau and the new president, Joe Biden? Often Canada gets the first visit. Obviously, that's not going to happen with the border shut. Will there be a call today or tomorrow between Prime Minister Trudeau and President Biden? And any news about a visit? Virtual?
Well, we certainly hope that there will be a virtual visit and a call very soon. I can't speak for the Prime Minister's office. They make that decision. But, you know, I'm optimistic that the two who know each other very well and who get along very well will be in touch very, very soon, because I know our Prime Minister wants to congratulate President Biden and begin that dialogue between the two countries. So I'm optimistic something will happen fairly soon.
Minister Garneau, Ontario Premier Doug Ford made a direct pitch to the new President Biden saying, send us more doses from the Pfizer factory in Kalamazoo. Is that something that you will pursue on a federal level, more cooperation on the fight against COVID-19 and maybe even getting some of those American vaccines?
I would say to you, Evan, that the two top priorities for Canada in terms of our priorities are basically the fight against this pandemic, against COVID-19, and the relaunching of the Canadian economy. I would say that that mirrors almost perfectly what the United States wants to do. They want to bring COVID-19 to its knees, and President Biden has been extremely clear on that. He's going to be very aggressive on that, as well as, of course, relaunching their economy as well. So there's a lot of areas where we can work together on COVID-19, not just our border policy or preserving our essential supply chains, but also exploring all sorts of other things. You mentioned vaccines. Those, nothing is off the table in terms of cooperation, because it makes sense for two neighbors to work together when we're dealing with something like a COVID-19 virus.
Two last things. Just before the Trump administration ended, they declared that the United States says there's a genocide going on in China regarding the Uyghur, the Muslim minority population. By the way, China has now hit back with sanctions against a number of U.S. officials. China is going to be a challenging file. We've talked about the two Michaels as well. How will the posture of Canada change vis-a-vis China working with this new administration?
Well, in fact, then Secretary Pompeo yesterday telephoned me to let me know that they were going to put up that position. Canada's position has been clear for quite some time. We are gravely preoccupied with all of the very strong and credible reports that have come out of Xinjiang concerning the treatment of the Uyghur ethnic minorities and other minorities, and including forced labor camps, and in terms of excessive surveillance and displacement of minority groups to different parts of the country. We have been saying for a long time that China should allow access to the High Commissioner for Human Rights for the United Nations. And we've also been saying that there should be an independent, impartial group that should be allowed into the region to examine the allegations that have been made against against China and its treatment of Uyghurs. So we feel very strongly that in something where there are such grave concerns and accusations with respect to the treatment of Uyghurs, that this needs to be pursued by an international body.
Right. Well, okay, but a parliamentary committee called it a genocide. Canada not there yet. The United States is. Last question, sir. In a pre-budget submission, Pfizer, which, as you know, is now giving Canada zero doses next week, but they're also simultaneously proposing a series of tax changes. They want the federal government to cut or freeze corporate taxes, approve targeted tax breaks, and ease up on scrutiny of international tax avoidance. This was first reported in the Globe and Mail. They say these policies impact how multinational pharmaceuticals decide where to mass produce and host research facilities. Considering what this pandemic has taught us about Canada's ability to produce a vaccine domestically, and the fact, frankly, that we're not getting any next week, what do you make of this? Is it appropriate for them to be lobbying the government at this time?
Well, I will just say, Evan, that our priority is getting vaccines so that we can vaccinate the Canadian people. And yes, it's true that we will not receive Pfizer vaccines next week. But at the same time, it's true that We are going to receive our lot under contract in the first quarter from Pfizer, as was originally agreed to. And as we have said on many, many occasions, by September, all Canadians will have had the opportunity to get vaccinated because of the fact that we signed contracts with seven companies. Two of them are already approved. Others will be approved shortly. So we will get there with respect to the vaccines. And that's our focus at the moment. I'm not going to address the question of taxation. That's probably one of my colleagues that needs to speak about that.
All right. I got to leave it there. Foreign Affairs Minister Mark Garner. Always good to have you on the show, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And we have breaking news literally right now. The newly inaugurated U.S. President Joe Biden has now officially revoked the permit needed to build the Keystone XL pipeline. The executive order was signed a short time after today's inauguration. We knew it was going to happen, but it's done. The decision is another setback for the Canadian oil industry, killing thousands of jobs on both sides of the border. The pipeline, of course, already under construction. It would have carried 830,000 barrels of Alberta oil sands crude from Alberta to Nebraska every day. The Alberta government invested over $1 billion in that. So what will Canada's reaction be? And we'll give you some tape of Joe Biden doing that in a minute. Let's bring in Canada's representative in Washington. Ambassador Kristen Hillman joins us now. Ambassador, I know you were at the inauguration and I want to talk about that, but literally it's done now. Joe Biden has not surprised anyone except maybe by the speed of this. He has now signed the executive order. What, first of all, did that catch you off guard, and does that effectively kill Keystone XL?
My understanding is the decision's been made and the decision is final. You know, we're disappointed, obviously, very disappointed. But and we spent a few months now, my team and I here, with working with Alberta and Ottawa and the industry to make the case for Keystone XL, which we believe is good for America and good for Canada. But President Biden made a campaign commitment and he fulfilled that today. So We're gonna move forward.
So what does that mean? Is there any response? I mean, clearly there's disappointment. He sure fulfilled this campaign promise quick. So, I mean, this was more than a pipeline. It was a symbol for his supporters. What will Canada's response be? Will there be any response? And, you know, there's another pipeline, the Enbridge Line 5, that the Michigan governor wants to cancel. Are you fighting for that one?
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to know that the Canada-U.S. energy relationship is enormous. We're the biggest energy supplier to the United States by far. And we have made, you know, a lot over time. We talk to the Americans about how this energy relationship is essential for their energy security, for their economy, for their competitiveness. And I think what's clear is that we also have to make sure that we are able to say to Americans that our energy relationship is important to them with respect to their environmental sustainability objectives. Because this government, this administration is coming in with a very ambitious climate agenda, and we have to recognize that and we have to take that into account in everything we do with this new administration.
I appreciate that this administration probably has many more shared, quote, values with the Justin Trudeau government than the Donald Trump government. They're aligned. There's a lot of personal relationships, and I think they're aligned, you know, on a lot of multilateral ways. But there's Keystone, and then the next challenge for you will be Buy American. Very strong Buy American language coming out of Joe Biden's campaign. Ambassador, if you don't mind, let me just listen to Joe Biden.
Yeah. Change the course of the COVID crisis, and we're going to combat climate change in a way that we haven't done so far, and advance racial equity and support other underserved communities. We're going to rebuild our economy as well. And these are just all starting points. We're going to, in the process of rebuilding the economy, do what I said throughout the campaign and while running rebuild the backbone of the country, the middle class. And so there's going to be a lot of focus on that. And I think some of the things we're going to be doing are bold and vital, and there's no time to start like today. So what I'm going to be doing, I'm proud of today's executive actions. I'm going to start by keeping the promises I made to the American people. A long way to go, These are just executive actions. They are important, but we're going to need legislation for a lot of the things we're going to do. And the first order I'm going to be signing here is relates to COVID, and it's requiring, as I said all along, where I have authority, mandating masks be worn, social distancing be kept on federal property and interstate commerce, et cetera. So this is the first one I'm signing. And the second one I'm signing here is the support for underserved communities. And we're going to already, going to make sure we have some bedrock equity, equality as it relates to how we treat people and healthcare and other things. We'll give you copies of these executive orders. And a third one I'm going to sign, and that's what I'm going to do while you're all here, is the commitment I made that we're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord as of today.
Mr. President,
President wrote a very generous letter. I have it's because it was private. I will not talk about it until I talk to him, but it was generous.
View on climate change. You were rejoining Paris Agreement.
Let's go, you guys. Come on, let's go. You have
concerns about
let's go, you guys. Let's go.
All right, so there it is. He's in the Oval Office, and he signed three of those, I think 17 executive orders rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. And I'm still with Ambassador Hillman, the Canadian ambassador to the United States. Interesting, by the way, that he said Donald Trump wrote him a very, quote, generous letter, but he wouldn't disclose the contents. But let's just get back to, in that stack, he cancels Keystone XL. What about Buy American, though? Joe Biden wants to rebuild the American economy, and he says, I'm going to do it with American companies selling to America. What will Canada do to fight back against Buy American to make sure there's a Canadian exemption to that?
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember we just renegotiated the NAFTA, and the NAFTA agreement received very strong bipartisan support, very strong Democratic support, almost unprecedented Democratic support. And the cornerstone of that agreement is the understanding that free, rules-based, open trade between our two countries is vital to both countries. There are millions of Americans that depend on open and free trade with the U.S., or with Canada, rather, open and free trade with Canada. And so, you know, President Biden, as he just said in the what you were just showing from the Oval Office, is seeking to do what is best for American and American communities in the context of his economic recovery plan. And open and fair trade with Canada is good for Americans. So we've got a lot of facts that we can bring to the table to talk to him and his team about that with, including, for example, very recent example on COVID, where in the early days of COVID, we had some disruptions in our PPE supply chains. Both countries suffered because we weren't getting what we needed because our companies weren't working together. When those disruptions sort of worked themselves out, all of a sudden, we were able to get more product to both countries faster and of, you know, high quality. So there's a lot of very concrete recent examples that we're going to be able to talk to him about and explain to him, while, you know, protectionist policies are often supported, we've seen them supported by Republicans and Democrats for years. When we really look at the facts, we see that really what's best for both our countries is open and fair trade.
Well, there's going to be a lot of issues. There's that. There's the two Michaels, as you know. There's COVID. There's the border. You're going to have a busy time with this new administration. I look forward to more conversations. Ambassador, pretty remarkable day, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's Ambassador Hillman, and I hope to have more conversations with her about some fundamental issues that we raised with Mark Garneau. But coming up, can Joseph Biden reunify a very divided America?
America has been tested, and we've come out stronger for it. And we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example.
So what will Donald Trump's supporters do now that he's gone? What happens to the Republican Party? Let's find out next. We got David Frum standing by and the former White House Cabinet Secretary to President Barack Obama, Chris Luz, joining us as well. Stay with us. And still ahead on the show, Derek Sloan voted out of the Conservative Party caucus. We'll take a break and we'll break it all down with the former interim leader of the Conservative Party, Ronna Ambrose. Lots coming up. Stay with us.
A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy: unity.
A unity president, that's Joe Biden's commitment today as he was sworn in as the 46th U.S. president. But can he heal the deep divisions in the country? What will he do in the first few weeks to define his agenda? And how does he reach out to more than 70 million voters who voted for Donald Trump? What about the Republican Party? Post-January 6th, post-Donald Trump, is that party at a crossroads? Let's bring in conservative commentator, best-selling author, former speechwriter to President George W. Bush, David Frum, and the former White House Cabinet Secretary to President Barack Obama, Chris Liu. Gentlemen, good to have you on the program. Chris, I'll just start with you. Interesting day today, different kind of inauguration. What will define Joe Biden's first couple of weeks in office, in your view, in terms of action, not just words of unity?
I think that's exactly right. He certainly said the right words today. He talked about how we need to treat our adversary. We need to think more about neighbors versus adversaries, that politics doesn't mean waging war. And so I think he hit all of the right tones and messages today. He said he wants to be a president for all Americans, not just for the people that supported him. But ultimately, it's going to come down to action. And the challenge will be, can he effectively reach across the aisle to make progress on broad issues, but do it in a bipartisan way? That's what he's expressed so far. But again, in order to do that, it requires cooperation and collaboration on the other side. So really, at this point, I think the ball is going to be in the court of Mitch McConnell and others as to whether they're going to reciprocate this call for unity.
Yeah, David Frum, there's executive orders today. He's killing the Keystone XL pipeline. Canadians interested in that, but a lot of undoing of what Donald Trump had put forward, like the ban from Muslim countries. What do you think the most urgent task for Joe Biden is?
Well, the most urgent task is to make less of a mess of the vaccination program than the Trump administration left it. The Biden administration can get vaccines into arms, get people out of their homes, back to full employment, that will buy him a lot of goodwill. And when you say, what can he do to unify the country? I think a lot of the craziness we've seen, and so many of us have it in our own families, we've got relatives who seem to have gone nuts. They're stir crazy. They've been locked indoors. They're cut off from contact with people. You know, as mom said, go outside, play in the yard, play with friends, get off the screen. That will make everybody a little bit better, a little less nutty. But I'm going to say one thing about to your question to Chris, and it's a little against my normal party instinct. But I think very profoundly that Biden would be making a big mistake if he worried too much about reaching across the aisle. The problem that Biden has gotten, the reason the United States has gone so in such extreme directions over the past decade, and especially under Trump, is the United States Constitution and all its other norms hugely empower minorities, especially rural minorities, especially affluent minorities. So they wield disproportionate power. And under Trump, that minority said, let's go for all the marbles. Let's act as if we were the actual national majority. And it was their aggression that made things so extreme. So the most important structural task now is to allow the majority to govern. The majority rules. The Republicans can then go into the business of building minorities for themselves. But if Biden does things to make it less possible for 46% to act as if they're 52%, he'll find the whole problem of politics becomes a lot easier.
Interesting. Chris Liu, what about the biggest challenges for Joe Biden? Look, he's facing an economy that's ravaged, 400,000 Americans dead, maybe up to 500 by the end of this. As David pointed out, a riven political agenda. What are his biggest challenges?
Well, David's 100% right. It's COVID, COVID, COVID. You know, we have been dealing with this virus here in the United States for a year now. The first case of somebody being hospitalized was a year ago. And we continue to have 3,000 to 4,000 people a day dying from this. And until we get our arms around this and really come up with a system for both producing and distributing this vaccine, we can't solve all of the other problems. The economic relief bill that was passed in December is only a temporary lifeline that extends until about March. More is going to have to be done until we get enough people vaccinated in this country so we can reopen the economy, businesses can reopen, people can start going back to work. But that still doesn't get us to where we need to be. And that's the central tenet of why Joe Biden keeps talking about Build Back Better, because he doesn't want to just go back to the economy of January or February. He wants to address some of the systemic inequalities, whether it's on education, healthcare, or the economy, that have persisted for decades. And we need to get our arms around that. I am hopeful that there's bipartisan sentiment to try to address this, but I think Joe Biden's also right. been in D.C. long enough to be a realist, and he understands that if his spirit of cooperation is not reciprocated, he's going to take action the way he sees fit.
Well, he got the majorities to do it, even though the razor thin. David, just quickly on the Republican Party, Donald Trump basically left, have a good life, he said. What happens to the Republican Party now? It was extraordinary to see Senator Ted Cruz sitting in that crowd at inauguration days ago. He had objected to the very same election result as many others did. Is this a crossroads moment for Republicans?
No, you see individual Republicans making individual decisions, individual bets about the future. So Roy Blunt, a senator from Missouri, he was there and a full-throated participant in the ceremony, a co-chair, and spoke in a generous way. Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, he's making noises about at least allowing an impeachment trial, or sorry, the trial of the impeachment to go forward. But you'll notice that Senator Marco Rubio from Florida did not attend. He had a lame excuse about how he was too busy. He had too much work to do, unlike the president of the United States. The real reason he wasn't there is because he's facing a primary challenge from Ivanka Trump in 2022, and he's betting that the future is being sycophantic to the Trumps. You'll see different Republicans making that gamble, and a lot of the future of the party and the country depends on making sure that the pro-Trump gamble proves a bad gamble.
We will find out. That Mitch McConnell statement was powerful. I just don't know if he's leading a parade with anyone behind us. That's going to be the question. Chris Liu and David Frum, great to have both of you on a really important day. Thanks, gents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on this program, Biden, his time, but also Canada's challenge.
I pledge this to you. I will be a president for all Americans. All Americans.
Biden is hitting the ground running with an ambitious 100 first day agenda. Where does Canada fit in? We'll talk about that with former Conservative Party leader Rona Ambrose, former U.S. Ambassador to Canada Bruce Hayman. By the way, we've just found out Derek Sloan is going to join us at the end of the show, so lots to stick around for. Welcome back. Joe Biden, of course, is the 46th president of the United States. What will he do in his first couple of weeks? How will he define his administration? He's already killed the Keystone XL pipeline. So for Canada, did not start as well as you might have thought. The press gallery is going to talk about that. Stephanie Levitz is a reporter with the Canadian Press. Robert Benzie is the Toronto Star's Queen's Park bureau chief. Rona Ambrose, former interim leader of the Conservative Party. And Bruce Hayman is the former U.S. ambassador to Canada under Barack Obama. Great to have all of you here, Ambassador. Obviously, this was an extraordinary day, and you've been waiting for this. And I want to get your reaction to it, but also because you were so involved when Barack Obama first vetoed that Keystone XL pipeline, can you dovetail both what happened today in general with specifically the strong message to Canada in the first hours?
Sure. Let me give you a little history. And first of all, I'm incredibly sympathetic to the people and the companies and the individuals this impacts. But let's just go through some history very quickly. Under the Harper government, they made this about everything. Literally in Washington, every minister that came in, with the exception of the minister on this show, but every minister that came in, and what was happening was nobody wanted to meet with Canadians because it was all about Keystone. Remember, you took ads out in subways, ads out in the airport, and you made it difficult in Ottawa as well. Now, the decision was made to not approve Keystone 3 days into the Trudeau government. And when that happened, that it opened up the ability to then discuss and have negotiations on just about every topic. Climate change, pre-clearance. We focused on, we had a state dinner. We had the president come in for a speech before Parliament, the first time in nearly 30 years. We did a lot and got a lot done. And I think that the team that's there is the same team that declined to approve Keystone the first time. And the vice president, and then a candidate, made it very clear almost a year ago that this was not going to be approved. So if they were to have asked me, which they didn't do, but if they were to have asked me based on my experience, I would have said, if you're not going to approve it under any circumstance, do it quickly, get it out of the way, so that the U.S. and Canada can focus on some of the things that we can agree on, and things like COVID and jobs and how we're going to operate on the world stage together, right, and China and all these other things.
Well, they did do it fast, Ron Ambrose. What's been the reaction in Alberta? Because there was no, you know, again, nobody is shocked by this. We're just maybe a little surprised at the speed of which the Biden administration did it.
Yeah, there's no doubt that all politics are local, and Biden is doing this to appease the left wing of his party that includes a lot of environmentalists that don't support this project. But let's just take a moment, and I agree with what Ambassador Hayman is saying, that there's many things that we can work on, and this is one irritant. And by all means, it does not define our relationship. But I think it's a stretch to say that it's Harper's fault because he pushed so hard for this project. Trudeau has pushed hard for this project. Many premiers have pushed hard for this project. Many people in the industry across the board, many union leaders, union activists, indigenous chiefs here and indigenous leaders all along this pipeline have pushed for this project. So it's not a partisan issue. This is a project that's gone through 10 years of approvals and it's been approved. It has a plan to meet net zero emissions by 2030. The oil sands that run through this pipeline, right, have reduced their emissions by 30%. It's going to create 60,000 jobs, and there's 1,000 people working on it today who just lost their jobs. So this is a much different project than Obama canceled. So, yes, there was some hope being held out that we could make the case to potentially keep this project as part of a framework, right, to address energy transition in North America. So it is really unfortunate. I guess if you have to hurt, you might as well take the hit quickly. And yes, there's many things that we'll work on together, including energy transition and climate, but it was a big hit.
Yeah, Steph, that's obviously a big hit. There's going to be some Buy American issues. What's your take on the challenges ahead for the Canadian U.S. relationship and what has to what will recalibrate now that Donald Trump's gone?
I mean, I think we've all discussed some of the elements before that will certainly recalibrate. One of them is that Justin Trudeau no longer has a useful foil down in Washington, someone that Canadians can look down to and say, no matter their political partisan stripe here, can say, well, at least he's not Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is gone. So there's that. There's the question of Canada's own COVID response, the extent to which U.S. President Biden can speed up some of the things there that Trudeau has been criticized for here, vaccine rollout being number one. Lots of talk, of course, about how the U.S. has its own access to vaccines. How is that going to get going faster? What does that mean for Canada's own sort of zero imports of vaccines in the near short term? And I think there's going to be some pressure there. And I also think we need to talk about the border, and we need to talk about how are both countries going to get that border reopened to resume the flow of traffic and goods between the two countries, and also from the immigration perspective. If we see Joe Biden reverse quickly a lot of the things that Trump did, there will eventually, I mean, global restrictions on travel notwithstanding, be a knock-on effect on Canada. Yeah. It'll be harder to attract talent, perhaps harder to retain students, and we'll have to see what that has to do, what that looks like going forward.
Yeah, interesting. Benz, your take on what will change now going forward from the Trump to the Biden administration?
Well, for starters, Evan, the United States is going to be back in the Paris Climate Change Accord, which, if you're Prime Minister Trudeau, is good news. You don't want to be the only one in this part of the world who's signed on to that, even if we aren't going to achieve our greenhouse gas emission goals unless we do some radically different things. I mean, the Keystone decision is obviously not good news economically for Canada, and it is a blow. But to Rana's point, it's a bit like pulling off a Band-Aid. They did it on the first day, and now we have hopefully 4 years of a little more stability and predictability. I mean, remember, Donald Trump was threatening Canada with aluminum and steel tariffs all the time. He was threatening to withhold personal protective care equipment early in the pandemic. And, you know, with the vaccine problems that we're having, there are many, many more things and many more challenges for Canada and for Canadians than just that pipeline. It's bad news for sure economically today, but maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, we can look back and say, well, at least they did it right away. We didn't have to waste all of this energy on that. And we can maybe be talking about other things like the Michaels trapped in China for more than 2 years.
Oh, there's no shortage. Guys, what I'm going to do is I got to cut this off because Derek Sloan is going to jump on. He was just booted from the Conservative caucus. So Ambassador Heyman, Steph Levitz, Rana Ambrose, and Robert Benzie, I'm going to cut this short. I'll probably owe you all a beer for all your work today, but I really do want to get to Derek Sloan. We didn't know he was going to come on. He literally, within the last hour, was just booted from the Conservative caucus. There was a vote. He plans to respond, and he's going to do it right here on this program. Stay with us on Power Play. Welcome back. So MP Derek Sloan has been expelled from the Conservative Party caucus, booted after taking a donation from a well-known white supremacist. This comes after the caucus spent hours discussing whether or not he should be removed. There was a private vote. After the decision, Erin O'Toole released this statement. I'll just read part of it. The Conservative caucus voted to remove Derek Sloan not because of one specific event, he writes, but because of a pattern of destructive behavior involving multiple incidents and disrespect toward the Conservative team for over a year. Events of the past week were simply the last straw and led our caucus making the decision it did today. Derek Sloan will now sit as an independent, but he's not happy about it, and he's on our program. And I know we only have a couple minutes, so thanks for jumping on, sir. What is your response, saying this is the straw that broke the camel's back, you are out?
Well, O'Toole is trying to save face because he got lambasted in caucus over how ridiculous the optics were of expelling me over, frankly, one of 13,000 donations that I had no idea was there. So he promised to come up with other reasons to sort of save face. Everything I've done has been public, Evan, and they're afraid of the influence that I have in the party. The straw that broke the camel's back is the fact that I've been organizing to bring delegates to our party's convention, and they know that I have a lot of them, and they're trying to get me out of there and discourage the delegates.
Now, they're saying, Mr. Sloan, and I know we just got a couple minutes, so real quick, they're saying, one, you signed up this guy, Paul Frum, as a member of the party. They've booted him out. It was your team that did it, they said, and they said he's a white supremacist. It was your donation. And then, they were not happy with you would not support to ban conversion therapy. They were not happy when you questioned Theresa Tam, the dual loyalty, asking, does she work for China? Does she work for Canada? He's just saying you're a problem, and there was a vote, and 50 plus one said you were out. What's your response to that?
Yeah, so when it comes to Paul Frum, that is absolutely incorrect. All party memberships go through the party. So, yes, our different campaigns had websites, and it linked to the party's website. You have no control over who signs up. So this person signed up not as Paul Fromm, but as Frederick P. Fromm through the party's website. We had no control over that. He donated through the party's website. We had no idea. They kept the 10% of that donation. They sent this guy a ballot. They would have looked at his driver's license when it came back to them. All of this was done at the party level. Apparently, he even signed up to be at the convention, which I believe they've canceled. But the fact is that all of these things happened at the party level, and we had no control over it, and frankly, had no idea.
So you're saying, and I understand you've said it was hypocritical, but just the vote happened today. How many people voted? I mean, I know it's a private vote. You're not in the party anymore. How many people voted to keep you?
So the numbers were not revealed to anybody. Only the caucus chair knows. And I just want to say one other comment. So, you know, you mentioned the Dr. Tam thing. Aaron O'Toole vigorously defended me in Ontario caucus during the Dr. Yes, Tam. He said, oh, you know, this is just a ploy by Peter McKay's people. This is silly. He reached out to my supporters. I have a Facebook post that he put out in the leadership saying Aaron was the only one to defend Derek. Therefore, Derek's supporters should put him number two. So this is, I mean, he says one thing one day and another thing the next. So this is who we're dealing with.
Mr. Song, I literally got a minute, so I just asked you for a very quick response. You're out of the party now. What are you going to tell your supporters?
Well, listen, I told them, do not leave the party. The party does not belong to Aaron O'Toole. It belongs to each individual member collectively as a group. Stay. If you're a delegate, remain being a delegate, and I'll keep fighting for the conservative values and principles that I always have, and I'll be happy to do that. I'll be proud.
All right. Mr. Sloan, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to keep this going. We asked Aaron O'Toole to join us. He was not available. I appreciate you jumping on. I've only got about 20 seconds left in the show. That's Derek Sloan. Thank you, sir. This is not over, obviously, and we'll try to get reaction from the party. But that is your day in politics here and your power play day. What a day, an historic day in the United States. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones. Lots to squeeze in. Take care.